Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Coming up on the programme today, in a moment myself and Dave will discuss some of the current business headlines from the local and national papers. In the business of this week, well, Sean Drum will be here. He's from Showtime Limited and he'll be here to chat with Dave. Showtime are sellers and distributors of high-end kitchen products.
David Bell from the HR department will be here after that for his regular look at HR issues. This week, David is talking to Declan about how to keep your millennial employees engaged.
That's a difficult job, and I'm sure David will have the answer. Finally then, a look at buying and selling shares. Should you get involved, or is it best avoided? Is there any more such a thing as a dead cert, a share that's guaranteed to perform? We'll be talking about that before the end of the programme. Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or the comment, or comment on any of the stories, well, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air to 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. And you can get us at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Hashtag local biz.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
So Dave, let's have a chat about what's happening locally and a little bit further afield in terms of the actual newspapers. So Heinz, well, they're bowing to the will of the people.
Yeah, are you a salad cream or a mayonnaise man?
I'm definitely a mayonnaise man. The old salad cream's a little bit too sharp for me.
Well, Heinz, big, huge company, a traditional company, just shows you stick to the things you know. They've decided against changing the name of the salad cream to sandwich cream. Fans of the condiment made their outrage known in June when parent company of Kraft Heinz announced that it was considering a name change for the first time in 104 years. Heinz said research had found that just 14% of consumers actually used the cream on salads, with most considering it to be an alternative to mayonnaise and pairing it with tuna, ham or cheese in sandwiches. However, a survey carried out by the company found 87% of customers wanted the product to remain as salad cream, rejecting other potential names such as fish finger sauce, chip sauce or roast potato sauce. Terrible names, really, aren't they?
You could use it on anything.
Joel Hughes, brand manager at Heinz, said, from TV debates to conversations around the dinner table, it seems everybody has a real fondness for not only the iconic zingy flavour of Heinz salad cream, but the name too.
I wonder if robots would like salad cream, because lots of humans are concerned about losing their job to robots. And have a listen to this, and maybe you'll be very afraid.
I'm just a robot and I know my place. A metal servant to the human race. I work my can off trying to satisfy. I know they'll disconnect me by and by. Shoulder made of silicon, my printed circuits like a lexicon, 10 billion logic functions.
Well, humans are concerned about losing their jobs to robots. A new survey has found that 2 out of every 5 adults here are worried that robots will take their jobs. The research on people's attitudes to and knowledge of different uses for software also found that people are equally split on whatever self-driving cars would be more or less safe than those with drivers. This was carried out in June of this year and it surveyed 1,000 adults and it was conducted by Red Sea on behalf of Liro, the Science Foundation Ireland funded software research centre. That's a mouthful. It found that 39% were worried that robots or artificial intelligence would take over their work. 11 think this will happen within 5 years and a quarter say 6 to 10 years. And two-fifths of people think autonomous cars will be safer than those driven by humans, but an almost identical number worry that they will not be. Awareness of where software is deployed in everyday life is high. The research established with 8 out of 10 people recognising it's used in traffic jams or traffic lights and air travel. Although just half of those surveys realised it was used in washing machines and pacemakers. The report also found a little over a quarter of people work from home at least occasionally through using software, with the percentage higher among younger workers. But when it comes to blockchain, the technology underpinning Bitcoin transactions, just a fifth of those questioned have heard of it. So we're afraid the robots are coming. I was wondering, this story was in the paper about 3 weeks ago on a Saturday. I was talking about it on the program on Saturday, and it said jobs like accountancy would be easily taken over by things, because they're quite logical and all that. But I was saying that I know a few accountants, and they'd laugh at that and say some of their customers just give them big bunches of receipts and say, can you sort that for me?
And
I haven't done anything since 1978, so I can imagine that would
that might not compute with the robot. Okay, moving on to the next story. Pre-tax profits at the government's travel agent, that is Club Travel, well, they plummeted it last year.
Yeah, I didn't know that the government had appointed a travel agent, but they probably do for the civil service, Travel Europe and all that kind of thing. New accounts filed by the Club Travel show that pre-tax profits decreased 88% from 6.5 million to 779,000, in spite of revenues increasing by 9.5%, going from 132 million to 145 million. In the 12 months to the end of October. This is reported in the Indo. And the sharp drop in reports is partially explained by a net exceptional cost of 3.1 million associated with the write-off. That's a 3.7 million write-off of a financial asset.
The Business of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
Well, this is the time of the programme where we interview or speak to somebody from a local business or somewhere farther afield about their business. And Showtime are a leading kitchen distributor of high-quality kitchen appliances in the UK and Ireland, based in the new, in a brand newly upgraded showroom and offices in Airways Estate, Dublin 17. And MD and founder of the company, Sean Drum, joins us in studio and is sitting here beside. You're very welcome, Sean. Welcome to Nearby Business.
Thanks very much, and good evening to you and your listeners.
Great to have you here. And as a small business, you know, firstly, can you tell us, tell the listeners and what you do and who you do it with?
We would supply, if you only actually come across us when you go looking for a kitchen. And only then do you come across some of the brands that we have, which are all luxury. That's from refrigeration, sinks, taps, LaConche range cookers. So everything we sell is top end. So when you walk through the door of your kitchen company to get yourself a new kitchen, that's when you'll come across us. So we supply the Grafton Group, which has Chadwick's, Woody's, the Panelling Centre, which is only up the road from us here. We also supply Cash and Carry Kitchens, which is a nationwide kitchen company. Cube Kitchens up in Balbriggan, they've got branches around the country, and lots and lots of different owner operator kitchen companies. Mm-hmm. There's lots of those, and smaller companies, like, you know, one man operators all around the country. So we're lucky that with one of the products that we have, that we're in every single sector from the top to the bottom. And so, you know, we may be luxury, but our feet are firmly on the ground, I can tell you that, you know.
Yeah, so you mentioned a couple of brands there. So you have suppliers and you have relationships with these suppliers.
I do.
Okay, so, you know, the last 6 or 7, 8 years have been very challenging, and Ireland has been kind of treated internationally with a little bit of scepticism. Things are returning now, and the figures of 9% growth have been bandied about for this year. How did the confidence and those relationships fare out?
Well, prior to the whole thing collapsing, you know, you would have been doing business with these companies for a long time. And like all distribution, particularly from outside of the country, where they don't really know you. You're based on your last payment being made, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you turn up at their door and you go to different exhibitions and you see them and you go and you meet with them. But it's definitely done on trust. Mm-hmm. So when I won't be crude, when it all fell apart, we found that they were willing, you know, they have a better view of when something goes wrong, because it's gone wrong somewhere else before in another country. So they would decide, okay, like for me, they all stuck with me. I didn't lose anybody. They didn't decide, okay, well, we can't go with this guy anymore, because we kept on feeding them with cash. And once you keep communicating, if you close up and shut the door and you don't answer that phone call or that email, they start to get a little bit nervous. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the relationships are very strong, and they stay along with you to this day, you know. Yeah. So,
and establishing credit lines with new suppliers, then just the usual thing. They look back and say, look at your accounts. They get a Dun & Bradstreet rating on you and all that thing. How do you find that works? Just not particularly for your own business, but for businesses similar to yourself.
I'm dealing with companies that have no money, and you know. We're not like the Germans, we'll say, where they close you down after 30 days. The minute the clock ticks over 12 on a Tuesday, that's it. The you're not going to pay you any, or not going to give you any stock. So you have to kind of manage that, particularly with smaller companies and smaller operators. And it's just done on trust. You give it out, and Dun & Bradstreet and all these really. You know, that's more of a ticking a box if you've got insurance.
Yeah, for insurance, yeah, I've seen that.
So, you know, again, we're just back to that one word, trust in business. I mean,
and then by the same token, then you've got customers and supplier or customers that buy gone out the other side. So obviously you'd have members of the public coming in, and they obviously would give you a deposit and you get paid. But then you've created trade accounts. So, you know, again, how do you find that in practice now?
Okay, well, we have to change. We're selling big ticket items. So if you've got a fridge that's going to cost you 25 grand, in the past, when everything was flying, we used to let that go out the door and wait 30, 40, 50, 60 days to get paid. Now, you wouldn't do that when you get to buy a car, because when you go in to buy the car, it goes nowhere till you sign the dotted line and the check is paid over, then you get the car. So we've had to take that model. And the banks, it was a guy who got out of the banks years ago who said to me, a fellow called John Ford from Galway, he said, look, Sean, I just want to let you know what you're doing is mad. You know, you need to get your money up front for these big range cookers, which cost anything from, 10 to 60,000, and the same with the fridges. Get your money up front. And I took that man's advice, and if we'd all had taken the advice from these guys, we wouldn't be where we are. But there we go.
Just financing small business then, just in terms of that. So you're starting a business, or you're in a business, and then, you know, cash flow. And you watch this stuff very, very closely. So you're looking at your projections and what's coming in and what's going out. Obviously, you have sales figures every month and every week, and your matrix, you keep an eye on those things, just to, for people who maybe hear.
Well, you probably asked the wrong person, because I'm a salesman. I'm not a manager, and I've kind of realized that over the years. You need to get the cash coming in. We have an overdraft with Ulster Bank, which I think when I applied for it, I'd done it with tongue in cheek, and they came back and they said, yeah, okay, we want to support you. And then they opened the doors for van finance and whatever else that we needed. And but it comes to a certain point where really they there's no relationship. You're not speaking to anybody. There's somebody in Galway. You might get to know them, but next week they could be moved to another part of the business, and that's gone. So they've taken all that away. But what I have found is that there's so many places now that you can get money from, and they're not banks, and you may pay a little bit more for it, but it's all very legitimate. It's very fast. I mean, in our case, I wanted to do a showroom, and I knew that we were going to spend a lot of money at it, and I wanted to get some money in quick for it. I mean, not that I didn't have it. I could have used them out of our own cash flow, which we have. But we just wanted another little kick, and we went to a company called Linked Finance, and I tapped in the numbers, and a lady rang me the following day, and the day after, the money was in the bank. There you go. Just like that.
Yeah, I suppose you still have to pay it back is the challenge.
Absolutely, but they can see. So what happens is, for them it's very, we sent them over. What I sent them really, when I look back, was quite minimal. I sent them all our bank statements, so they can see the cash coming in and out.
Your operations,
And they can see, okay, he's got an overdraft, but he never really uses it. I mean, he may went close to it and maybe used it once. So they look at that, and then they contact maybe some of your suppliers, and then also you have a credit rating.
Yeah.
So for them, it's they don't look at the past. That, if you're going to look at the past, it's like everything.
Yeah.
I try to tell my children, stop talking about the past. You can't change it. Let's go forward. I hate to use that word, go forward. I can't believe
going,
I said it.
Going forward.
Yeah, no. So, you need to, look to the future. And I think that's what they've done. And they've created a niche for themselves.
And as you say, they charge a slight premium for it. But you get a decision quicker and you can move on and keep pushing the business forward. In terms of just people working with you, working for you,
what sort of
numbers have you got?
In the good old days, well, you know, there's never. It's like when they talk about.
You're
Dublin.
Looking back now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you see, they talk about Dublin in the good old days. There was no such thing as Dublin in the good old days, because if you looked at it, it was horrible. But I had 28 people working with me, and that meant I had 28 personalities and attitudes walking through the door every day.
Yeah, a challenge in itself. Yeah,
I hated Monday, because every time Monday came along, for some reason or other, they all wanted to rise together. And that sort of the part of the business I don't really like. I would be just quite happy just to be out selling.
Right.
But we had a lot of people, and I had vans and trucks and all that kind of stuff that went with it. And I always said that once it got moving to any degree that we would outsource.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds like we're a very small business, but we...
But you're contracting it out to people.
But we're very hands-on. I mean, this morning I was in at 6:30, we emptied a container, and we had another half a container this afternoon. So it's definitely all hands-on. And when I need somebody, we'll take them in. And when we don't,
it's probably a much more prudent way to run the business, given, I suppose, you probably have the scars of recession like everybody had, where you had a larger workforce than you have now.
You're cautious.
So you had to deal with all that when the crash came, and therefore you're a little bit more cautious. And it gives you a more flexible approach, I suppose, to business, to take it in and out as you require the resource.
Yeah, for sure. I worked for an organisation in the UK, Blanco, and they were importers and manufacturers of sinks. And it was the perfect job, because I didn't have to worry. What I sold was not my problem afterwards. That was the accounts department. They got the money in. They took all that. I didn't have to do anything else or worry about anything else. So they knew that I understood intrinsically what I had to do was to sell and off out, and I'd done that. Now, if I want to plunge myself into a bad humor, I only have to look at the bank account, the sales figures, I do personalize it. I think anybody who's in business as a family or whatever else, I would love to be like somebody who just kind of doesn't show any emotion.
But it's very difficult to separate the person from the business when you're running your own business. It's almost
24
impossible.
24 hours a day. I'm the same. I'm running a small business, and you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and say, "I wonder, did I do this or check that drawing or whatever you're doing?" But have you outsourced your logistics, or is that something that?
We use.
How does that work?
It's brilliant, because what you do is you get people who know what they're doing to do the work. We use Nightline, they also have that parcel motel. They're a very good company. They've been bought over by
UPS.
That's it. UPS have bought them over so they'll change over to that livery by 2020. We use a wonderful company up in Blanchardstown called TechMove, and they do all the work for like AIB and Bank of Ireland for lifting big machines and big transformers and stuff. So they're able to move our refrigerators, which are extremely heavy, very difficult to move, along with our cookers. So yeah, get the right people to do the job.
Okay, let's just talk about things like technology and websites. You have a really nice website. I had a look at it today. Your logo is lovely. There's a switch in the middle, which denotes that you're selling into the electrical sort of field. And did you get any assistance with the website?
Yes, we did. We did that website. We, of course, like everything else, we didn't want to spend any more money on anything. And we knew our website was old. It was clunky. It wasn't ready for mobile phones, and we are a distributor. And I through the Drumcondra business initiative, I came across the local, I think they call it Leo Enterprise office in Swords, and there's fabulous people working up there. And I went to a couple of courses, and then there was one particular one for a grant for $2,500 to update your website. Well, actually, we didn't update it. We just got a new website, and we made it that you can buy online,
okay,
no matter where you are. So
Does everything you have suit online purchase?
Well, I'll tell you why we do it. We have certain products that are on there, and the reason they're there is that because outside of Ireland, there's other people doing it.
Yeah.
So, you know, when somebody comes and said to me, hey, Sean, I see, you know, one of your products that, you know, is online. Are you going online now? No, it's just there to, okay, forget somebody, if they buy it, that's great. We've taken a sale from somebody else who's taken it out of the UK or Holland or Italy. And they're all out there and they're coming for us. So we need to do something about it. And that's what we did. And thankfully, with the assistance of Leo and Quick Brown Fox in Drumcondra, who are the marketing people, they put together that website. We're really happy with it.
That's great. Yeah. Just when you touched on it there, I'm just going to ask you the next question in relation to the ever-present is the Brexit thing for small businesses. We're actually really attached to the UK, whether we like it or not, in terms of trade and such activities between each other. They like us, they talk the same as us, so to speak. We have similar values and all that. You know, some companies have made sort of arrangements to source product outside of the UK and all that. What, have you thought about anything like that yourself? How's it going to...
Well, we started in the latter part of last year looking at doing business in the UK, and you know, trading in the UK for very one reason. I don't want to go through what I went through for the last 10 years of, you know, trying to keep the roof over my head. I've been down that road. I had to go and take a longer running a business and leaving people to run a business. I had to get on an aeroplane and travel around Europe and the Middle East and in the United States, making sales for another company in order to pay the bills. So for us, really, I would say to anybody out there that if you're in business and you're getting into business, whatever you have going on here, you need to look outside. You need to look at the UK. They're there. It's right in our doorstep. There's God knows, 70 million of them over there. And there is, you can do business and make money. It's only, you know, there's a bit of water between us. And if you can at all find a niche, you got to do it. Mm. Because... look at,
and what do you know? We don't know. We had a special. We had Bertie in here talking about it. He's a very knowledgeable man on the subject, as he's done a lot of negotiation between the two islands in the past. And do you think there'll be a deal done yourself? I mean, how do you see it? I mean, are you worried about having to pay a tariff and big delays and getting stuff in from the UK? Is what's going to happen? Do you think? I mean, you're not the man.
But you know, in the past, I've looked at all these things where we're told by the media and you guys that the whole thing has been brought to the brink, and that it's the world is going to end. We had Y2K.
GDPR,
all that. And that just, that if there's anything going to wind me up, is that you just continue on doing your business. Get up in the morning, go do your business, because the UK is a market. And whether you're selling BMW, Mercedes, bread, fruit, meat, they're there and they want to do business and we want to do business. And when you have two people or two countries who want to do business, they will do business. And we will, like everything else, just get on with it. The world is not going to end. Mm. It's just not going to. I'm going ahead, and let's see what happens. If there's a tariff, what's it going to be? 2, 3, 5? We who knows? But we will sell.
Yeah. Later on in the programme, we're going to be talking to David Bell about retaining the millennials and people who come to work for you. It's a bit of a sort of an employee's market in terms of where they work at the moment. Great, and it's brilliant that day has come.
Full employment.
We had a lot worse in 2010 and all that. How have you found it recently in trying to recruit and looking to recruit? You know, just to fit in to what you need. And
well, I imagine it's the same in every other industry. There is nobody out there now. Hmm. We don't have electricians. We don't have plumbers. We don't have plasterers. And like everything else, you start going further and further down, and you're getting people who just aren't qualified in any way to do the job.
Or interested in some cases.
Yeah, they could. This reminds me of years ago. You had people who took the job, and on their first day they were late, and there you go. I say no more. Anybody that's in business knows exactly what I mean. It just becomes, and the best thing to do with somebody like that is just get rid of them. You know, there's no need for having them there. They only make your business worse. So we have a problem. We need people coming back in from outside of Ireland again. My experience of people who came in from Lithuania, Latvia, Poland, very positive, fabulous people. Get on with it, do their work, and they do their work very, very well. And God, I hope there's more that will come back to Dublin or Ireland.
Okay, I'm just going to ask you a little bit about the product just before we go. What's happening in the high-end kitchen market at the moment?
There's a big exhibition in Germany. There's two actually every year. The one I was at recently in Berlin, it's called IFA. And that's where all the electrical companies, whether they're selling TVs or computers, gaming, all that, they all show their wares for the future there. And the one thing I came away from was, never mind all about the Wi-Fi stuff and, you know, ovens that speak to you and all that sort of stuff, at the end of the day, most people pick up the product, the chicken or whatever else, they stick it into the oven, they press 220 or 200 for an hour and they walk away. So, you know, having all these screens showing you how to do this and how to, that's all very nice, I'm sure. But robotics, that is scary. And it's amazing I remember walking away and looking back and then going back again to have another look at it again and saying, how did they do that? And right down to, if you were, say, unfortunate to be in an accident, paraplegic, or you're never going to walk again, there was almost like something that literally encapsulates you, takes your arms, your legs, and allows you to move around. And they've made it smaller and smaller and smaller, and you can see where this is all going. Trolleys that will go around the shopping centre or the shop, picking your product, putting it into a basket, and your credit card debited as the sale is done, and it's just wonderful to see. So maybe we won't have to worry about getting people in from other parts of the world.
Just eat, get robots, stay at home. Just like Homer Simpson. Yep. Sean Drum of Showtime Essential Kitchen Products, thank you for sharing your business with us on the Business of this week on Nearby Business.
Okay, coming up in the second half of the programme, well, we'll have some more news stories to bring you. We have an interesting one about Bono and a trucking company. That'll be a very interesting one. Also, we'll be talking to David Bell, as we said, about keeping your millennial employees engaged. And also, we'll be talking about buying and selling shares as well. All of that to come in the next half hour.
This is 90.3.
This is Near FM.
And welcome back to Nearby Business. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories this evening, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air here until 7 o'clock this evening. 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or you can get in touch anytime on Twitter. We're at @nearby_business, #localbiz. Now, we've a very interesting story that we came across about Bono and a trucking company.
There you go. An on-demand truck technology company backed by U2 frontman Bono and lead guitarist The Edge has raised $198 million. That's according to this. It's 167 million euro through the sale of new shares in a move that values the startup at 1 billion. Based in Seattle, Convoy is a provider of on-demand shipment services designed to connect trucking companies with freight shippers. It has been described in some quarters as the Uber for trucking. The company was named GeekWire's Startup of the Year for 2017.
Brilliant. There's an interesting rugby story as well, Dave. James Sheridan has Ireland's next generation of rugby players in his sights with his range of products aimed at helping children to develop their tackling technique safely. He launched it in Monaghan recently. It's called Tackle Low. And he was exhibiting as well down at the Ploughing Championships there. Hopefully he wasn't one of the people who got blown out of the place. And it's a really interesting new device with all this kind of talk about concussion and all of that.
Injuries
and all that in the sport. This is a device to help young kids as they're learning their craft, I suppose, with rugby, to learn it in a safe way.
Yeah, how to tackle properly. It's a very important thing, because a lot of the guys who would actually be involved in this don't tackle properly and go in and get neck injuries and head injuries and all that kind of thing.
It's really interesting. So more information on that you can find on James Sheridan's website. Tackle Low is the name of the company, and the website is tackleLow.ie.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest too in technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
David Bell from the HR department is here now for his regular look at HR issues. David, tonight we're going to look at how you would go about keeping your millennial employees engaged.
Yeah, it's I suppose it's something that is, it comes up. I mentioned it in your previous interview there before the break at 6:30. You know, it's something that it's an ongoing issue that has raised itself. I suppose it happens at any stage. Millennials is obviously, depending on which way you look upon it, it can be somewhat a negative. I suppose I see it more in the positive sense in what they bring or what people of that age bring to the workplace. But yeah, I mean, I think there are challenges with every new generation that come through, and this is just one that perhaps because you know, there is quite a bit of potentially a generation gap between a lot of the people that I may deal with in terms of their age and the people that I have working for them. So there's no doubt that there are challenges within that.
I suppose we even have some as the next one, the next sort of group they call as Generation Z or Generation Z, as the Americans would say, are coming through as well, and they'll probably have a different expectation, as you say. But it is that sort of differing expectation from previous generations, and then just the older generation trying to understand the younger generation, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think one of the big changes or differences perhaps is that when people would have traditionally stayed in one job or one company for a long time, I think that's definitely changed. I think the idea of going into a business in your, you know, early to mid-20s and staying there for 30-odd years or so, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Of course, there will be people who will do that. But I think it's accepted now that you're going to have a much bigger turnover of staff. And that's partly because, you know, companies are different nowadays. I mean, maybe the more traditional companies had a very hierarchical, very defined hierarchy, and there was certain expectations of upward mobility if you stayed in a business long enough and you did the right thing, that you would gradually move up, where nowadays it's maybe not so simple as that. And I think and that allied with the expectations of a lot of people, that certainly, you know, a lot of the younger people who are coming into the workplace are very ambitious. But they also want to see where they're going. So a lot of companies that perhaps relied on, I suppose, the idea that you have a job and, look, you know, you're happy to have one and you're lucky to have one. Maybe during the recession that might have come back slightly. But I think, you know, as I said, as you alluded to earlier in your conversation, you know, the job market is very buoyant at the moment.
Yeah.
And certainly you do have to start looking at how best, if there are ways of, maybe not, you know, just sort of throwing money, as they say, at the problem, looking at different ways to try and retain staff and or accept that there are people who will just go no matter what you do.
No matter what you do,
that's
yeah.
Part and parcel of what you do.
And what motivates a millennial, David? I mean, is it money? Is it that pathway that you described, that they, you know, they can see a clear pathway for the future? What makes them get out of bed in the morning?
Yeah, well, I think money is one thing to an extent, but I think certainly studies have shown that they are, by and large, as much concerned about their progression. there is an element of, you know, you hear anecdotally people say, you know, at interviews they feel that they're being interviewed rather than interviewing the candidate. And the questions that they're asking are about, you know, how are you going to make me better? What am I going to learn? What are the opportunities here for me to grow and develop and move up the organization? And that can be very challenging for some companies who don't traditionally think about those things in a very strategic way. It's sort of, you know, if someone gets to a stage where they, you know, and look, we've seen it all along. I'm not saying everyone who's ever been made a manager or promoted is like this, but there's certainly cases where someone might be in a job a particular length of time or is very good at that job. And then they're suddenly made the manager because of that. But without any real thought as to would they be a good manager? Are they, you know, able to develop a team? So I think the questions that are being asked often, even when people are in the workplace, start to raise those issues as to what structures do you have in place? How are you going to identify what sort of training, what sort of assistance will I get to develop myself? And with the view to helping the company, but as I said, ultimately, if it's not happening in a particular organization, I think the generation, this generation, maybe that one coming, are quicker to move away.
I'm reminded of a sketch, I'm sure I saw it on YouTube or somewhere, where the interview, I'm sure you're aware of it, where the interviewer says to the interviewee, how's your IT skills? You know, have you an understanding of Word, Excel and PowerPoint? And the millennial on the opposite side said, what? And said, well, you know, computers, IT, all of this sort of thing, the interviewer said. And the interviewee came back and said, well, I understand Snapchat and Twitter and, you know, all of that. So that probably just shows the generation gap that needs to be bridged.
Yeah. And as I said, I think as well, there, you know, you mentioned the sort of IT. One of the things that we've noticed is that, and I think it's part of the education, that there's a lot more maybe cooperation and project-driven when they're in second level and into third level education. So they're used to working with teams of people. They're quite comfortable in that. And that sometimes can be a change for organizations, again, where there might be a boss or a manager who sort of tends to lead by strength of personality and makes all the decisions. And suddenly there are people there who are challenging that and see nothing wrong with that. And it's probably to be encouraged. But it can often cause problems because they may be seen as the junior person, and really they should be keeping their head down. And a lot of these millennials are very confident. They expect to be given a voice, and they expect to be listened to. Whereas maybe again, in a traditional sense, people were less inclined to do that because it just wasn't the nature of it. So there is that. And I think going back to the question of what do they want, I think, you know, that whole life work balance is hugely important. There's a lot of discussion about it. Cases about it. We talk about it before in the program about, you know, switching off and avoiding, you know, the workplace, and that is definitely coming into it as well. I mean, the whole idea of connectivity and constantly being on, you know. So there is, whilst people all, you know, a lot of people do want to work and want to stay within that, I think everyone has to recognise that there has to be a work-life balance, and I think companies are looking at different things. You know, it's not all just about the pay at the end of the month. They're looking at different ways, flexible time, maybe extended holidays, trying to figure out what is it that clients or what is it that their employees want and need. And you know, they often obviously it's the best places to go and ask them. So we've got companies that are even going beyond a wellness, you know, there's companies that operate these. They run exercise classes, dance classes, retreats. You know, they've gone out and said to their staff, what is it that you want us to do to try and help make work a more enjoyable place? So I think a lot of that, those ideas are coming, and it's not sort of, you know, and I know a lot of people listening, I think, like, what the hell am I going to be? You know, I own a shop, or I run a garage. I'm not going to have yoga classes. Of course not. But, you know, you have to start looking at them. And if you do have a high turnover, you've got to ask yourself why. Sometimes, as I said earlier, I mean, one client of mine realized after we looked at it sideways, 50 ways up, that his business was such that he had no hierarchy. He had no prospects of really moving up the chain. So he had to accept and did accept and turn it into a positive that most of the people who came to him after 4 or 5 years were going to leave because they'd nowhere to go except to go. So he understood that. And once he accepted that and saw that, he became a bit of an expert. He was quite chuffed with himself because his staff were seen as very expertise. But that was frustrating him greatly because he felt he was investing in these people time and money, and then they were leaving him. Whereas when we looked at it and spoke to them and looked at his business, we realized the reason was because he didn't have any infrastructure. He had nowhere for them to go.
Yeah.
So once they got to a certain level of expertise, if they wanted to keep getting better and keep growing and, you know, going up from being promoted, they had to leave.
They had to go on somewhere else.
That eventually, yeah. And that was the way it was.
And yeah, I suppose, as you say, once you accept it, you can then focus on what the positives of that are and keep moving. I also, as well, when you were talking there about work-life balance and all of that, the millennials as well, and the younger people, I'm sure Gen Z coming through as well, they want and have less traditional ways of working. You know, I'm thinking of remote working or working at different times of the day or night, as it might turn out to be. And, you know, that sort of idea of 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, might not necessarily suit. It doesn't suit every industry, but it may not even suit the more traditional type of industry that would have had that way of operating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, there was something just without sort of changing something in the paper that TUC in Britain, I think, are trying to move towards a 4-day week. And how is that going to work? And people are constantly, there's been experiments done in different countries. There's no doubt that you know, that whole idea of 9 to 5, 8 hours a day, where did it come from? Why do we have to have it? And there's no doubt that people are working much more differently than that, be it coming in late or staying late or working late, working earlier. There's no doubt that has to be looked at. And again, sometimes it is easier for some businesses and some industries to work like that. Clearly, if you're a pub or a restaurant, you have to be open a certain time, a shop or whatever, to service your clients and your customers. But if you work in a sort of an office service-based environment, there's no doubt that people are having to look at that and be a lot more inventive in terms of how people work, with the capacity that technology brings, but also the nature of the people that are working for them.
Dave Daly here. How you doing? Nice to talk to you again.
Hi, Dave.
Just in relation to that, then on the other side of things, the pendulum could swing the other direction in that there's 24-hour access to internet and email accounts and things like that. So people would, is the trade-off perhaps, well, I don't mind you coming in at 9:30 if you were working until 9 o'clock last night talking to Seattle or whatever. Is that something you've come across in flexibility terms or inflexibility terms, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, again, as you say, it does have its problems. I mean, we could talk again about, you know, the issues about trying to get people to stop working, and it is trying to get the balance. I mean, I think ultimately, what people have to look at, and we often ask this question when someone says, "Look, there's someone working remotely or working from home a lot more than I'd like," and I'm not sure what's their production? Well, you know, what is their job? What are they meant to be doing? If they're achieving that. Again, there is sometimes that traditional view that if they're not sitting in front of me, I don't see them coming in and coming out. I don't really know what they're doing. And again, it's not going to apply every time. We certainly ask the question, well, are they doing their job? I mean, if there's something their presence is required for, obviously you need to start getting people in and obviously meetings and face-to-face. I think we all accept that much better. But with technology and conference calls, so you do sometimes ask, what is the problem? Is the problem that they're not coming into work, or they don't appear to be working as hard as everyone else, or is it actually what they're doing? Mm-hmm. And we often find that there's nothing wrong with the output, there's nothing wrong with the work, it's just
perception,
and that, you know, so we would look at that and see, is there something more to that? So again, it is that challenge of trying to overcome this idea that, you know, people who aren't there aren't working all the time, and if they aren't, well, then at least get some sort of level of measure that you can tell that, so that you can say, you know, notwithstanding the fact that we've allowed all this, you're still not getting the job done to the level that we require. So it's not to do with the remote working, it's not to do with your flexible working hours, it's to do with the fact that there's something amiss, that the job's not being done properly.
Okay, David, as usual, thanks for that comprehensive look at how to maybe keep the millennials happy in the workplace. Thanks a million.
Thanks, folks.
That's David Bell there of the HR department with, as usual, a very comprehensive look at that particular topic.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
So, Dave, we're going to look at the topic of buying and selling shares. Should we get involved in it, or is it best avoid it? Now, during our research for this piece, you found that there's one particular month that's probably a bad month to get involved in this.
Well, according to Mark Twain, who died on the 21st of April in 1910, he said, October, this is one of the peculiarly dangerous months to speculate in stocks. The others are July, January, September, April, November, May, March, June, December, August and February, which is every month. So that's his take on it.
That's his advice. Although on a serious note, October was the month for crashes. If you go back to the 1929, 1987 and the more recent one in 2008, if you're like many people, the stock market can seem somewhat of a mystery as well. And if you're particularly cautious, probably a mystery that is best avoided. But when you consider that we're currently, at the moment, experiencing the ninth year of the second longest bull market in history, well, perhaps now is the time to get your head into the game.
Okay, first things first, you got to figure out what type of investor you want to be in general. The higher the risk, the greater the return can be, but the opposite is also the case. So if you're just starting out and want to make and take things easy, you have less money to play with or are naturally more risk averse. That doesn't rule out you entirely in the long term. The stock market has actually shown great return on investment, a greater return on investment than property and, in fact, any other asset class. However, you must buy and sell shares, index funds, exchange traded funds, etc., through a stockbroker, or buy via managed funds or through financial advisors or insurance companies. Stockbroker's fees incur a minimum cost of about €25, which is not that much. So unless you have a minimum of about €1,000 to invest, you may be better off waiting to purchase shares. Okay, so no matter how risk averse you are or how bold you might be, you're better taking care of your pension or your emergency fund. Some people have a 6-month expenditure fund for a rainy day, or buying your own home before you get into the stock market. And there are plenty of managed investment portfolios and cater for more conservative investors. They're the likes of Zurich, Standard Life and all those kind of things, and otherwise known as pooled investments, through which your money is blended with that of other investors and then invested by seriously experienced fund managers, with others including shares and bonds and life insurance.
So you shouldn't really get involved in this yourself directly. It's you know, speculate or spend what you can afford, I suppose, is the real message there.
Absolutely. And they're saying it there that you need a certain amount of money. Make sure that you have your 6-month fund. I've often heard people saying that, and I'm sure for lots of people out there, that's incredibly impossible to have a 6-month fund. So if you're paying a mortgage of €1,000 a month, so you'd have to have 6,000.
Sometimes difficult enough to pay the one month.
The one that you have in front of you. So that's a little bit of a, I would love to know the real figures and how many people have that. But if you are interested, say somebody came into a few quid through inheritance or whatever and said, I'm thinking of investing in shares. So maybe this is the way to go. And go to your bank and buy through your banking, go to a stockbroking firm. And it's quite easy to do it if you want to just set up an account with them. It's a bit like a Paddy Power account, really.
Yeah. You know, you can monitor it on the phone now. You can, on iPhone or Android as well.
All those kind of things, you know. Yeah. So most importantly, this type of portfolio diversifies your investment, ensuring that all your eggs are never in the one basket, but each portfolio is built and managed for your based on your risk preferences. Usually 1 to 7 ratings, with the higher the number, the higher the risk. You benefit from a level of security and knowledge that would be missing if you were simply to start buying stocks without expertise. Of course, even without a fund manager, one of the great things about this type of investment is how easy it is to keep an eye on performance. And we just said it there, the daily newspapers, your Android, your stock market, you can always know whether your shares are rising or falling.
Of course, one of the most famous investors is a fellow called Warren Buffett. I think everybody would probably wish they were Warren Buffett.
I wish he was my uncle.
He has an uncanny knack of getting in at the right time and out at the right time. And we have a short piece of audio from Warren giving a little bit of advice to potential investors.
You don't have to be right about thousands and thousands and thousands of companies. You only have to be right about a couple. I met Bill Gates on July 5th, 1991. We were out in Seattle. And Bill said, you've got to have a computer. And I said, why? And he said, you can do your income tax on it. I said, I don't have any income. Berkshire doesn't pay a dividend. He said, you can keep track of your portfolio. And I said, I only have one stock. I said, I mean, and he says, it's going to change everything. And I said, well, will it change whether people chew gum? And he said, well, probably not. And I said, well, will it change what kind of gum they chew? And not. And I said, well, then I'll stick to chewing gum and you stick to computers, you know. I don't have to understand all kinds of business. There's all kinds of business I don't understand. But there's thousands of opportunities there. I did understand the Bank of America, you know, and I'll be able, I'm able to do that. I'm able to understand some given percentage. But Ted Williams wrote a book called The Science of Hitting. And in The Science of Hitting, he's got a diagram, shows him at the plate, and he's got the strike zone divided into 77 squares, each the size of a baseball. And he says, if I only swing at pitches in my sweet zone, which he shows there, and he has what his batting average would be, which is 400. If he had to swing at low outside pitches, but still in the strike zone, his average would be 230. He said the most important thing in hitting is waiting for the right pitch. Now, he was at a disadvantage because if the count was 0-2 or 1-2 or so on, even if that ball was down where he was only going to bat 230, he had to swing at it. In investing, there's no called strikes. People can throw Microsoft at me and, you know, you name it, any stock, General Motors, and I don't have to swing. And nobody's going to call me out on called strikes. I only get a strike called if I swing at a pitch and miss. So I can wait there and look at thousands of companies day after day, and only when I see something I understand and when I like the price at which it's selling, then if I swing, if I hit it, fine. If I miss it, it's a strike. But it's an enormously advantageous game, and it's a terrible mistake to think you have to have an opinion on everything. You only have to have an opinion on a few things. In fact, I've told students if when they got out of school, they got a punch card with 20 punches on it, and that's all the investment decisions they got to make in their entire life, they would get very rich because they would think very hard about each one. And you don't need 20 right decisions to get very rich. You know, 4 or 5 will probably do it over time.
That's Warren Buffett telling us what he knows, and he's a very rich man. Now, you got to next consider the type of shares you want to buy. Publicly quoted shares in companies like Apple or McDonald's are where people mostly think of freely traded shares in a public company. Whether you want a piece of the action in technology, food, tourism, or any other industry, you'll find one open to investors. As well as the knowledge that you will then literally own part of the company is in the fact that successful share ownership should bring a regular income. If the company is doing well, your investment will earn dividends or a share in the company profits plus capital appreciation. So just remember that you will be liable to pay tax on both dividends, taxed as income, as well as capital gains tax at 33%. If interest has been piqued, if your interest has been piqued, contact a registered Irish stockbroker to ise.ie or email various sort of websites that have addresses and so on that you can look at on site. These being Davy, Mary and all those companies,
all those
are
guys,
the banks.
Yeah.
Even at the your local AIB, if you went in and said, I want to buy some shares.
I think it's appropriate we finish with a Warren Buffett quote.
Yeah, and it said, remember Warren Buffett's wise words, the stock market is a mechanism for transferring wealth from the impatient to the patient.
Excellent. Be careful. Only spend what you can afford and take professional advice, I think is the main message after all of that. Dave, a former GAA player has moved to selling grass. What's all that about?
Dublin, he was the nemesis for years. I remember being in the Davin stand and this guy was injured playing for Kerry, running behind the goal. Anyway, he got booed and all that kind of stuff. It's Kieran Donaghy. It's PST Sports, the Kerry-based artificial grass company, is expanding into the British market, having secured a contract with Chelsea FC. And Kieran Donaghy is their business development manager. So well done to him. He's finished playing for Kerry last week and he's now selling grass. We wish him all the very best. Look, I think he's a gentle giant, really.
A gentle giant. Okay, well, that's it for this week for Nearby Business. Thanks to all our contributors this evening. We'll both be back with another Nearby Business at 6 p.m. live next Thursday evening. In the meantime, don't forget, if you have a comment on any of the stories today, or you'd just like to get in touch, or you have an idea you'd like to discuss with us, well, the best way to get us is on Twitter, and we are at @nearby_business, #localbiz. So from me, Declan Ralph,
and me, Dave Daly,
we'll see you soon on the radio. Bye for
Thanks
now
for
bye 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 bye